You're listening to KPFK and Melting Pot, and it is our distinct pleasure to welcome in a legend and somebody who I'm really thankful to have in the studios right now. Barry Adamson is our guest in the studios. How are you doing, Barry?
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here. You're doing good. Thank you.
And you're here in Los Angeles performing a show, a kind of more stripped down and kind of intimate thing. And you also have just an acoustic guitar for us today. It's a different sound than perhaps we're used to.
It's a kind of different version of me, I think. Well, there's been a sort of strange either progression or regression since the beginning sound of electronica and doing sort of weird experimental soundtracky things to sort of I guess in the last few years, more of a conventional songwriting. Usually I play with a full band, so we're able to go, you know, the full gamut of electronics. And I'm just, you know, on my own promoting pretty much a new record. So I've got a stripped down show with a little bits of a playback and electronics and acoustic guitar, which will sort of give a general overview of what's been going on.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, why don't we get you to perform a couple songs? I'm really excited just to hear you in this kind of style, and
sure.
I'm sure listeners who are familiar with your work are as well. So I'll throw it over to you for just a couple songs. This is Barry Adamson performing here live at KPFK.
Okay, here we go. People, they are dumb. They whisper that they love you and detonate a bomb. Well, I've been this way before, and now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my mind. Separate myself from the blame, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart. People, they ain't no good. Their hearts are made of stone, their heads are made of wood. Oh, well, I've been this way before, now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my mind. Separate myself from the shame, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart. Dabby 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 dum. Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah. Dabba 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 dum. Whoa, whoa, yeah. They are dumb. They whisper that they love you and then detonate a bomb. Well, I've been this way before, and now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my mind. Separate myself from the blame, separate myself from the shame, separate myself from the game, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart.
Thank you.
see who's sliding in from the frozen exterior. My icy fingertips made warm by her sweet lips, and she whispers something that you'll never hear. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, and the stupid things they say give me nothing but ails of your goddamn service, a goddamn bore. Tell them we'll leave by the service door. Never my time, but you know I'll do some more. Yeah, yeah. Friends don't bother me, don't even call at all. They're busy whistling, Dixie, and cussing my name. My house is burning down, but then she come around and quell the fire and start it ablaze again. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, stupid things they say are the things that I portray. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, and the stupid things they say give me nothing but ails of yours. Goddamn circus, a goddamn war. Tell them I'll leave at the service door. Done my time, but you know I'll be no more. No more. Yeah. No more. Doing each other's heads in through the power of suggestion. And we'll be doing each other's heads in, yeah. Attention, that's the power of suggestion, and we'll be doing each other's heads in, yeah.
You just heard Barry Adamson perform a couple songs here in our studios, and again, Barry, it really is a pleasure for me to have you here. Known quite a bit about your work. I think that my introduction to you was around the period of time when, I guess, Oedipus, Shmenopus came out. And just before that, I guess this was right around the time I got into college. And so I had just gotten introduced to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and those early Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds records that you were on. And especially the bass playing on Your Funeral, My Trial, that song, like it still kind of haunts me.
It still
to this
haunts
day
me
that
as well, Michael. I've got to tell you that. It was a pivotal moment of my bass playing career. No, I mean, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that is really striking to me about that song in particular. And I mean, there are so many different songs over your career. I mean, it's a 30 plus year musical career at this point, with some amazing bands early on, and then as a solo artist, though still in collaboration with a number of incredible people. But as you were kind of saying, how that song haunts your memories, it also haunts mine, just because it was kind of that introduction, because it literally was a moment where I was like, who's playing bass on this song? Like, I don't know if I've heard. Yeah, like, how do you get that sound? And it's, you know, something that's stuck with me and it's, you know, constantly gotten me excited to continue to hear more from you. And so one of the things I did want to kind of start off asking you just a few questions about kind of your upbringing. I'm always really interested in learning a little bit more about kind of how musicians kind of come into music making process. And I know that you grew up in Manchester, and I was wondering how that experience growing up and at that particular period of time, how that influenced you to move on to magazine and other things.
I think it was very important time, and I was at the right place at the right time, being 17 years old, and the punk movement had just sort of kicked off, and I was all set to be a graphic designer, or at least something to do with drawing or the arts, and you know, magazine came along and sort of it was like one of those doors that just opens, and you sort of look at it and go, I'm meant to go through there. So I'm just going to walk through it and see what happens. And it was all very, it was all done very swiftly. You know, I was at college, and then over the weekend, I went to buy a bass guitar. I had two strings on it. No, somebody gave me a bass guitar. I went to buy the other strings. That was it.
Had you ever played before?
I just messed about a little bit at school, but I saw all these other people sort of playing Stairway to Heaven in their sleep and just thought, there's no way I can ever do any of that. So four strings looked more appealing anyway at the time. So I got the other two strings, and there was an advert for magazine. So I called it, and then by the weekend, I was in the band. After the weekend, I was in the band, so I quit the college thing. And being in Manchester there was a whole legacy of stuff around you, you know, that you knew was sort of a kind of strange epicenter, you know, America over there, the rest of Europe over there, and you're in the middle of it. And just, you know, as you can see now, the history of people and bands that come from Manchester is very influential outside of London. So we didn't really need to go anywhere at that time. And we went to London a bit later on once magazine got going. But as the starting point, I think Manchester was the center of the world, as it were.
Yeah, and it was a nice run with magazine for a few years. Magazine, a band, most people, if they have to put a label on it, would call it kind of like a post-punk kind of band.
Wave, yeah.
And after that, you found your way to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and Nick Cave also, prior to the Bad Seeds formation, was in the Birthday Party. It was kind of like a punk art rock kind of band as well, and
yeah.
To me, I would think listeners of Magazine or listeners of the Birthday Party really must not have been ready in some ways for the kind of sound that you guys got together. It still is a sound, those first four records that you were involved with, that is really hard to classify to me.
I think they're pretty unique, those records. I was doing something last year, and you know, having to sort of go over them a little bit and sort of thinking how strange they are and how bizarre they are, and how in some ways I talked at the beginning about whether it's sort of progression or regression that you become a pretty mainstream just sort of playing your song, you know, like, which Nick kind of does now, really. But to go back and listen to those tracks, they're just something else. My attraction, I saw a little bit of that in the Birthday Party, I must admit. There was a more, magazine was very very controlled and very disciplined, whereas, you know, and I think somewhere in there I craved a little bit of the opposite, which was sort of chaotic and not very disciplined in some ways.
Yeah.
And see how that, you know, how music was created from that side of the world, if you like. And I certainly got that. And I, you know, during those four records, I watched how sort of like things come together in just another sort of way altogether than someone coming in and going, okay, it goes to C, the G, and then the E minor. You know, it's just this thing that's forced out of the situation of being with other people in a room, you know. And so it was, as far as like Magazine and the Bad Seeds go, after that I felt I'd had everything that I needed, really, from being in a band and how that was and how that affected you as a person. And then the encouragement as well of working with other people like Iggy Pop and some other, you know, to then go on my own and see what I wanted to get at.
Yeah, and I think this one of the things it's kind of implicit in some of the things that you were saying right there. One of the things that I've always found really fascinating about your solo work is that on the one hand, it is very deeply personal and deeply individualistic. I mean, at this point, I don't, how many instruments can you play at this point? You can pretty much.
Well, I'm a bit of a, you know, I'm sort of, what do you call it, something of many, but whatever of none. So I kind of, you know, it's like, for example, to come here and then, you know, present the songs of the new album, and I thought, well, that would probably be the best way to do that would be with an acoustic guitar. I don't really play acoustic guitar in terms of that's what I do every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might carve out the songs that way and write, and then someone will come in and play. You know, I don't sit around playing the acoustic. So I kind of had 2 weeks of sitting down and playing the acoustic guitar. But it's that thing where, you know, there's an instrument, it makes sound. Let's see what you can get out of it. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, of course, my first port of call was the bass. And so I feel like I'm a fairly proficient bass player, and I can do a bit of drums and a bit of guitar and a bit of keyboard, you know, that sort of thing, like, in order to write the stuff that I do.
But yeah, so many people, you know, they have kind of their one instrument and they're kind of held to it. But as I was saying, you know, it's the situation where that you're a multi-instrumentalist and that you, it seems very clear that you have very, very strong kind of individual opinions about your sound. But there's also this very strong collaborative focus throughout almost all of your solo career, too. And that kind of balance between presenting yourself as an individual artist, but also collaborating with, I mean, in some cases, really big heavyweights, you know, Robert Fripp, you mentioned Iggy Pop, Jarvis Cocker, David Lynch, all these other kinds of people that have kind of been throughout your career. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that as a solo artist, these kind of two sides of the solo artist, both collaborating and also presenting your own vision.
I think you kind of move around in a way that you want to get at something and you want, you know, to be a part of the magic, but you also have an idea of pretty much how you want your picture to look. And if somebody else is also, you know, getting their picture up there, you can't help but sort of stand back and be appreciative of the way, of what their angle is, and you very quickly sort of work with what's going on, and that's why you want to collaborate with them in the first place. And I think there has to be a sort of element of trust of what's going to be delivered and how it's going to be perceived and all the rest of it. But then you've still got your thing of being like the molder, you know, so it's a bit like sculpting, and then you get this sort of bit of clay, and then you start molding it around, and then you go, oh, that's the way I do, you know, that's the way you do it, and the other person will do their thing, and you go, that's really good, you know. So I quite enjoy that, but I am a little bit of like, right, now everyone's gone, let's get to work. So I kind of, then I sit down with the clay, and I can go, just had a really good idea about this. And sometimes, you know, I have to, you know, see that what I'm doing is like a very elaborate, colorful sketchbook, and then get people in to sort of help me create that, you know. And I have like four or five guys who, on the new record, for example, and the last record and the record before, I know what they do, and I know how they do it very well. So I have fun going like, oh, when Ian comes in and he's going to play that beat, he's just going to take it out, and I'll go, well, you know, that's the beat I have. And he'll go, okay. And then he'll start doing it, and then just throw something in, and you go, oh, my God. And that's why, because it's like I have my limitations, you know, and I know what they are, as you can probably hear from my acoustic guitar. No, but, you know, I know my limitations. So therefore, if you're going to do things in a certain way, then you bring people in that are appropriate to do, you know. So I can work that way as well as a producer and an arranger. I think that's the main things that I'm getting at the end of the day, the way it sounds when you hear the final thing as well.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the process of this, putting together this new record, I'll Set You Free.
Well, this was it's quite odd, because I actually started this record about 18 months ago, and I hit this sort of, I had about maybe, I don't know, 12, 13 tracks, and I hit this sort of brick wall, which was like, usually I'm quite, you know, I don't, well, so far, touch wood, don't really suffer from like writer's block and this kind of thing, but what I did suffer from was I started to see these little default sort of traits that I have, that I was falling into quite a bit. And so it started to become a little bit painting by numbers, painting by, you know, Barry Adamson, sort of like, and there's a jazzy bit, and there's a this bit. And I thought, whoa, this is really scary. I thought, you know what? I've got to do something else. I've got to do something else altogether. And I'd always been going on in every interview about film and my, you know, obsession with film and the people I've worked with, like you say, you know, David Lynch and, you know, Oliver Stone and all these different people. And I thought, you know what I've got to do? I've got to make a film. And, you know, the time to do it is now, because, you know, you can afford a camera that, you know, will get out and all the rest of it, and you can probably do it. So I made a 40-minute film, which is kind of like an album as well, called Therapist, with a soundtrack.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the film later on, but basically, you were kind of working on the album.
Yeah.
And not quite in a moment of writer's block, but just kind of a slight dissatisfaction. You're like, you move towards the film.
More than I've had before.
Wow.
And I thought, well, maybe that's it. You know, So I made the film, and I was able to write it, direct it, and edit it, and put the music on. So I felt, you know, that I got that out, as it were. And then, in the last 9 months, maybe, 6 to 9 months, the album just kind of shot through. Maybe there's only two tracks that were in the original writing. So then the album just literally flew at me. You know, I had to chase tracks down the street and sort of go, you know, come back, you know, because it was just still really going off. So I feel really good that kind of happened in a very quick way. And I made it pretty much at home. And then I took it to another studio and put it through big old analog desk, got some really, you know, sort of big juicy sounds on there because it was that kind of record. And I guess really, in a nutshell, what happened was I went back for a magazine reunion before I made the film, and I think what it made me do was it sort of alerted me to a sound that I hadn't really been a part of for a long time, which was more the rock thing, which was, you know, the early days, it was all about that. And so I almost like found something again that was in myself that I'd sort of go, went, you can, you know, just rest there for a little while. You know, it's that 14-year-old kid who kind of waited for Alice Cooper records to come through the letterbox from America and go like, yeah. So that was its evolution, really.
Yeah, and that comes through on the album, you know, really, really clearly from the first track, from, you know, Get Your Mind Right, yeah, which just kind of screams out the box. And it's one of the things in thinking about the record and the last, in the last couple records that you've put out, that it does have this different feel to it. It still has, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about a kind of expectations on a certain sound for you. It still, and maybe actually, now that I'm thinking about it in my head as I'm saying this, maybe it's less about the actual sound of the record, more kind of the listener's expectation, because I think a lot of your music in the solo career, or post Bad Seeds, has had this kind of darker quality to it and much darker tones, musically and lyrically. And so it's hard in some ways for a fan of your music, I think, maybe to listen to it with new ears, which was one of the things, again, that really struck me in hearing you play acoustic, just how different the sound of your music is in that kind of space versus the kind of fully produced space.
Well, I like to think that, you know, people's expectations will be sort of thwarted in a way that's they can, you know, at least sort of see a side of it rather than going home and going, well, that was pretty awful, wasn't it? You know, why did he bother coming out? No, but you know, and in this the little showcase, if you like, that I'm doing, I'm going to try and sort of show pretty much all the different facets. There'll be something, you know, dark and humorous, and there'll be something kind of light and sprinkly, and something a bit jazzy. So, you know, but it's hard to sort of condense all that. And I mean, I've not played here before ever, so that sort of poses something to me as well. Whereas, like, in anywhere else, I've seen people kind of, you know, go with each record and go like, hey, yeah, you know. And then when I do a certain one, they go, yeah, that's. But I kind of cover all the bases in that way. So, well, I think people will like what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah, it is something that I think, again, as a long-time listener to your music, or a fairly long-time listener to your music, that it was jarring in that good way that you were kind of describing right there. Took a couple listens.
Just getting worried for a second. Well, Barry, you've come all the way out here and you brought a piece of crap. What is this?
No, but it is really fascinating to me, just both the kind of when you feel like you kind of have a read on somebody or somebody's sound, very subtle changes in some ways.
Yeah,
really
make a
big difference.
I think there's a subtlety in there because obviously it comes from the same place in terms of the person. But I'm also playing with things as well. You know, like I Will Set You Free is the sort of not so much the jokey ethic of the record, but there is the idea of it being less oppressive, if you like. That I'm, you know, like sort of getting in there and boxing the sounds, you know. And it really, as I say, the way the record came through me, if you like, I almost felt this sort of weird sort of uplift to push out this thing and actually set it free, if you like, you know. And then in that, maybe perhaps myself a bit more, you know, or whatever. I don't know. So it became the sort of, like, I could see that there was something kind of brewing in that sense. And, you know, there was a couple of tracks, and I think one of them ended up, I think it was track six, the Trigger City Blues, which is probably one of the darkest things I've ever done, you know. And that had to stay for a little bit of a balance, you know. But, yeah, I think I start to see a glimpse of what, almost like what it's telling me where it wants to go in a way as well.
Now, it's interesting in hearing you tell the tale earlier that this record and kind of that freeing aspect came from you focusing on doing something that you, though you'd had this great interest in film, you hadn't been a filmmaker.
No.
Do you after making Therapist, do you want to continue making films?
Yeah, I'd love to. But you know, now of course it seems to be the hard part, which is generating money to make a feature. 40 minutes you can probably just about do, you know, yourself, and you know. But in terms of a bigger picture, yeah, you then have to get sort of a lot more serious. But I've got a couple of things on the go which I'm writing, and also I occasionally work on a show in England called Ideal, which is a comedy show which I act on a little bit. And the writer that was very interested in the film, and he said, "I'd love to work with you and come up with something." And we've got an idea going that's pretty full on, and we're going to start working on that in the new year for a feature.
Now, your first solo record, Moss Side Story, was more or less a soundtrack for a film that didn't exist. Is there any idea in your mind to maybe actually create that film as a film?
A lot of water has gone under the the bridge. The Manchester Ship Canal has gone under a lot of bridges since then. And it's funny because, like, along the way, people have come up to me at various points and sort of said, "Oh, I'm interested in making that film, if you like." Well, maybe not. If anyone's going to make that film, I'll make it. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. And occasionally I get sort of the notebook out and start scribbling down notes, you know, particularly if I've been to Manchester recently and drove around my side. I start to sort of get this you know, sense. One day, I think when it would be an easier thing to do, I'd like to do a sort of, you know, almost like a biopic kind of thing from the 50s to now. You know, maybe someone who grows up through the whole thing. That's quite interesting to me. But, yeah, I think I need to get a few things under my belt first.
All right. Is there any way we get you to perform another song?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Have guitar, we'll travel and play.
Thank you so much. We've been talking to Barry Adamson here at KPFK in Melting Pot, and I'll throw it over to him for another song.
The storm it came, but it merely only broke me for a while. Ooh, I heard my name, and it took me, and it shook me like a child. The sun and the sea, my love endlessly. Bring me your eyes, your plastic little lives, and I will set you free. Brothers burn with rage. Ooh, I killed the bear and I ate up all the people in my cage. The sun and the sea, my love endlessly. Bring me your dreams, you don't know what it means, and I will set you free.
You just heard Barry Adamson performing here in our studios at KPFK and Melting Pot. Once again, I can't thank you enough for coming in, Barry. It was fascinating on so many different levels, and again, shocking, like in the best way, and kind of where you feel like you have a really good read for how something sounds, and then hear it in a totally different way. I don't know if you'll ever just decide to do an album just with acoustic guitar and that marvelous voice of yours, but it would be really interesting, even just to hear that, or maybe kind of like a reimagining of some record, you know.
Well, I guess what I've had to do with these tracks is reimagine them in a way. It's funny because it's almost like somebody else's work, and you're going like, "What does he play there?" In fact, I sent an email to Bobby, our guitarist, going, "What's that inversion that you play there? That's not, you know." Yeah. Of course, he never got back to me. That's where you're going. Figure it out yourself. You wrote it, yeah, but you play it so differently.
Yeah. But it's just been been absolute joy.
No, it's nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Michael.
Now, here is a song from his new release, which is going to be coming out in February, called I Will Set You Free. The name of the song is If You Love Her, from Barry Adamson, here on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Into her face as she was leaving, saw my future written between the lines. The church bells will no longer be appealing. Dark must fall where the sun no longer shines. If you love her, won't you tell her? She was everything a moment when you were her fella. If you love her, won't you let her go? Firmly drenched in sorrow, the fruits of love almost shriveled up and dry. Each moment now is a version of tomorrow, seen through the eyes of one who can only cry. If you love her, won't you tell her? She was everything a moment when you were together. And if you love her, won't you let her go where hope is? Where did I become? You're only one forgotten. Made up to always cast a smile. This velvet suit can never hide the bruising. My goodness, you've been laughing all the while. If you love her, won't you tell her? Lives where hope lives.
Music from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, featuring the otherworldly bass playing of Barry Adamson. From the album Your Funeral, My Trial, originally released in 1986, you heard the title track. A track that continues to haunt me, as we mentioned during the interview. And also, just after the interview, you heard something from Barry's latest release, I Will Set You Free. The song was If You Love Her. Originally thought about pairing that with some Scott Walker, but some things happened during this week and shifted how I was going to end the show. So right now, got another tribute. We really had a hell of a time this week. Lost three legends of soul and blues music in Jimmy Castor, Johnny Otis, and Etta James. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I'll be doing a tribute to Etta James next week. I imagine probably Bill Gardner will do an Etta James tribute as well in Rhapsody in Black here on KPFK Fridays from 8 to 10. But I did want to pay a little tribute to Johnny Otis, who passed away. Big time legend, California music, Los Angeles music, Bay Area music, great on the radio as well. And hopefully you got to hear all the foolishness of the Johnny Otis show wherever it was played on the radio or on record. But I just wanted to play a few songs to Johnny Otis in tribute to him. Focus on some of the funkier things. And this first one, I guess more bluesy, but the first time I heard this song was, I'm pretty sure, on a Schoolie D record. I thought it was a hip-hop song. And come to find out that it's really more kind of a proto-hip-hop song. So Johnny Otis with a cleaned-up version. Tell that to the FCC. Cleaned up version of Signifying Monkey here for you on KPFK Melting Pot, and a tribute to Johnny Otis. Mm-hmm.
Rocky told the line one day that the bad mother hustler coming down your way. Talking about your people, I'm sorry to say, but he talked about your mammy in a hell of a way. Talked about your sister and your grandma too, and he didn't show too much respect for you. Off like a mighty breeze, knocking coconuts down and giraffes to the knees. He come up on the enemy and say, hey, big old banter, cover up some dish about you, about all these bad things that you supposed to do. The elephant looked at the lion out the corner of his eye. He said, please, Mr. Lion, pick on somebody your size. The lion jumped back and made a fancy pass, and the elephant kicked him right square in his ass. The lion roared and swung from the ground, and the elephant knocked him right straight on back down. The lion went through the jungle more dead than alive, and that's when the monkey really started his jive. Say, I thought you called yourself the Jungle King, but I found out you ain't a good like thing. See, cause every time I'm fixing to mess around and get a little bit, you come around here with that ruin ish. Monkey started laughing and jumping up and down, and his left foot missed the limb and his ass hit the ground. Like a flash of lightning in a bowl of heat, lion was on the monkey with all 4 feet. There was a monkey cried, said, Mr. Lion, that man, that's out of sand, and I'll stand back and fight you like a natural man. The lion backed up all full of fight, and the monkey jumped 60 feet out of sight.
Chick I was telling you about the other day, man.
Ooh-wee, she's all right.
Yeah, man. She's deep in the waist as a waltz. And wide in the hips as a horse.
And she's so fine.
Great big country girl.
You know one thing? I can tell the way she walks, she ain't been here long.
Yeah, man, I was down at the train station when she got here. She didn't have nothing up on her arm but a little paper sack. But you know something?
She's so bad.
Great big healthy country girl.
Well, oh, she's the finest thing.
Finest thing in the world.
Well, all right, plant sugar.
Man,
what's her name?
Man, it's 38, 24, 38.
And she's so fine. Hey.
Great big old healthy country girl.
Yes, she is. Oh, she's the sweetest thing.
Sweetest thing in the world.
Say, wait a minute now. Don't let her get away. Call her back, Dale.
And I'm gonna lean right here on this wall and drink this her walk. You heard me call a while ago, and I know you know, like I know. You can take foxes out of the country, but
what?
You can't get the country out of foxes. Walk on, baby.
Alright. Come on.
Baby, 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 walk on.
Say, what's she shaking like that for?
Johnny, 'cause I'm the duckin'est, dodgin'est.
Music in tribute to Johnny Otis here at the end of the show. Whole set of just a few more songs. Hopefully you got a chance to tune in to Bill Gardner's tribute to him. And, you know, Johnny Otis is somebody who's important to music in Los Angeles, really important to rhythm and blues just in general. Man more or less discovered Etta James in the mid-50s, though, you know, some people would have you think the Chess Brothers did all of that. But Johnny Otis was a major, major part of music, major part of Pacifica, KPFA, playing the Johnny Otis show. And I'm very, very happy to spend time in the Bay Area when it was actually on the air and hear Johnny on the show. And so in that set, I played you Going Back to L.A., kind of his switcheroo on Sweet Home Chicago. The Vibrettes doing Humpty Dump, and the Johnny Otis show doing the Watts Breakaway. Vera Hamilton with one of my all-time favorite dance floor numbers, even though it's real slow, But I Ain't No More, GSTSKDTS. Johnny Otis production. Johnny Otis show doing Country Girl, and started things off with Signifying Monkey from Johnny Otis, and all the family, especially Shuggy, playing guitar on that. So hope you enjoyed that tribute. We'll have a tribute to Etta James next week on the show. The interview from Barry Adamson will be on our website at meltingpotblog.com. Tomorrow should be up there. You know, we'll see where we go from here. So, thanks for listening. Folk Scene's up next. Y'all take care.